Rohatsu Sesshin. Celebrating the Buddha's great awakening. In our favorite way of celebrating, Zazen. Yesterday, I started telling the saga of the story of Shakyamuni Buddha in his own words. His noble search for awakening, enlightenment. So here's today's episode. Realizing that he was subject to birth, aging, sickness, and death, and realizing that he had been seeking all kinds of things, also subject to birth, aging, sickness, and death. He thought, why not seek what is not subject to birth, aging, sickness, and death? Why not seek the unborn, the unaging, the unailing, the deathless, sorrowless, and undefiled supreme security from bondage or suffering, nirvana? And with such a intention, the Buddha left home, and then the story goes like this. Having gone forth, monks, in search of what is wholesome, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace, I went to Alala Kalama. So Buddha left home, left the home life, went forth from the home life into homelessness, and the first thing he did, or we don't know what else, but one of the first things it seemed like is I've just been living in the palace, this supreme security from bondage, nirvana. I don't really know about that. I need some help. So he went looking for a teacher, which very nicely, there were lots of them in India at that time. Lots of others actually looking for the same thing, the supreme security from bondage. And somehow this story sounds, this is 500 BC, but somehow it sounds somewhat contemporary to me. Maybe in the kind of Buddhist world, because there are all these teachers, there's all kinds of spiritual teachers all around the world, and people go and see them. So I went to Alara Kalama. We don't know exactly how he found this teacher. We probably heard about him, ran into him. And I said to him, "Friend Kalama, I want to lead the spiritual life in this Dharma and discipline, in this Dharma, in this truth, in this teaching, and in this vinaya, this discipline, this practice, these forms." Alara Kalama replied, "The Venerable One may stay here." There's your hut, or your tent, or your tree you can sit under. This Dharma is such that a wise person can soon enter upon and dwell in it, Kalama said, realizing for himself through direct knowledge his own teacher's doctrine, he said to me. I soon quickly learned that dharma. As far as mere lip reciting and rehearsal of his teaching went, I could speak with knowledge and assurance, and I claimed, I know and I see. And there were others in the community who did likewise. He's saying, I learned those teachings, that philosophy, that view of reality, and I could talk about it. As far as mere lip reciting, the Dharma is like this. I could speak with knowledge and assurance, and I understood it conceptually. Dharma's, we don't know exactly what Dharma Alara Kalama taught, but it's beautiful when Dharma can be put into words and expressed in a way that makes sense, and we can learn it, even if it's kind of complex. And others could talk about it like that too. And the Buddha says, but I considered that it's not through mere faith alone that Alara Kalama declares, by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge, I enter upon and dwell in this Dharma. Certainly, Alara Kalama dwells knowing and seeing this Dharma. So, it seems like it's not just by faith in hearing this teaching that he speaks, it seems like he actually knows it's true. So I went to Alara Kalama and asked him, Friend Kalama, in what way do you declare that by realizing it for yourself with direct knowledge you enter upon and dwell in this Dharma? In reply, he declared the base of nothingness. It's kind of funny language here. But I understand this to be, how did you, the Buddha is asking, the Bodhisattva is asking, how did you come to enter upon and dwell in this Dharma, to confirm it for yourself? And he said, by practicing this realm of nothingness. And we hear that the Buddha, later when he was the Buddha, in his system, he taught these levels of concentration, levels of meditative absorption, called the eight jhanas, deeper and deeper states of concentration, withdrawing more and more from any externals. And again, very clearly laid out in the Buddha system, exactly how you move from one of these jhanas to the next. Beautiful road map. These are not stages of enlightenment, they're more just stages of concentration, meditative absorption. And the seventh out of the eight, almost as deep as you can go, is called the base, or the realm of nothingness. And so apparently there were teachers in Buddha's time who were teaching these eight levels of meditative absorption, and the Buddha continued to teach them after he was the Buddha. But he didn't say that that was like his awakening. These were more like methods. So this teacher said, I practice this nothingness, this meditative absorption in nothingness. And then the Bodhisattva says, I considered not only Alara Kalama has faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. I, too, have faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Suppose I endeavor to realize the Dharma that Alara Kalama declares he enters upon and dwells in by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge. He's a diligent practitioner, but so am I. And And after all, that's why I gave up my whole life to seek the supreme security of bondage. This is what I came to do. Suppose I practice this way too. And then the Bodhisattva, the Buddha-to-be, says, I soon quickly entered upon and dwelled in that Dharma by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge. Then I went to Alara Kalama and asked him, Friend Kalama, is it in this way that you declare that you enter upon and dwell in this Dharma by realizing it for yourself with direct knowledge? He, I think, describes his practice in realization to his teacher, and his teacher says, that is the way, friend. They're having like Dokusan here. It is in this way, friend, that I also enter upon and dwell in this Dharma by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge. Kalama says, it is a gain for us, friend. It's a great gain for us that we have such a venerable one for our fellow monk. So the Dharma that I declare I enter upon and dwell in by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge is the Dharma that you enter upon and dwell in it by realizing it for yourself with direct knowledge. And the Dharma that you enter upon and dwell in by realizing it for yourself with direct knowledge is the Dharma that I declare I enter upon and dwell in by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge. So you know the Dharma that I know, and I know the Dharma that you know. As I am, so are you. As you are, so am I. Come, friend, let us now lead this community together. Later in the Zen tradition, they sometimes use these phrases, I think from this sutra. As I am, so are you. As you are, so am I. They use that in a kind of connection with, like Dharma transmission. I think this is a beautiful pre-Buddhist Dharma transmission, is it not? They have one and the same understanding. And, very nicely, the teacher says, since we're kind of like, we have the same practice and understanding, Let's have a teaching council model. Let's lead the community together. Thus, Alara Kalama, my teacher, placed me, his student, on an equal footing with himself and awarded me the highest honor. But, you know the story, yeah. But it occurred to me, this Dharma does not lead to complete disenchantment, to complete dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, or awakening, to nirvana. But it only leads to rebirth in the base of nothingness. Not being satisfied with that Dharma, disappointed with it, I left. So somehow I find this inspiring that the Bodhisattva to be. I think maybe a sort of sub-context in the story is that he, it's sort of like, I think this might be true in the story of Jesus in the wilderness too, that he was tempted by the devil, and one of the temptations was like, you could rule the world. Is that right? Something like that. And let's not get into that stuff. That's kind of a sidetrack. This is not quite rule the world, but like, you could be an honored spiritual teacher in the community here. And you'll be supported by the community and you'll have a high status and all this. And Bodhisattva did realize this pretty profound realization of the seventh jhana. I think it's kind of difficult. to realize the base of nothingness. But he felt like, I don't want to stop here. I want to keep going. There's more to do, and I don't want to get done. I don't want to get all caught up in all the politics of community life. So I might get distracted from my noble search. So he moves on. This I don't know how he knew with his strong intuition and meditative abilities that this practice only leads to rebirth in the base of nothingness. It's part of this whole system of early Buddhism that yesterday we talked about these deva realms, right? The heavenly realms in the Buddhism is one of the six realms. How does one end up in those realms? Through these types of meditations. One can cultivate the base of nothingness diligently in the human realm, so one can enter into it very easily, and then after dying in this human realm, through the intention to be born there, one could be born through karmic conditioning in the heavenly realm of the seventh jhana, heavenly realm that's based on this nothingness. Pretty good, as I said yesterday, that these realms are pretty blissful and they last pretty long. This footnote says, this heavenly realm is the objective counterpart of the seventh meditative absorption. Here the lifespan is, I said millions of years, but it's actually 60,000 eons in this heavenly realm. But when that time has elapsed, one must pass away and return to a lower realm. So it's not free from birth and death. The footnote clarifies. Well, maybe kind of hard to describe nothingness. Nothingness. There are Theravada teachers and modern America who teach these jhanas and put them in more detailed and contemporary terms. So there are teachings available, especially for the first four jhanas. When they start talking about these higher four jhanas, there's less to say about them. I think almost like enlightenment or awakening. And parenthetically, Dogen himself has an essay called "The Monk in the Fourth Jhana." The Monk in the Fourth Meditative Absorption. And Dogen's whole story, as I recall, is that this monk is in his fourth meditative absorption, which is pretty sweet. And he thinks that it's the fourth stage of awakening called Arhat. But then when he dies, he doesn't end up in such a good place. And so he thinks the Buddha fooled me. Whereas the Buddha is actually, no, you actually just misinterpreted your state. So Dogen has his way of talking about, Dogen was interested in these issues too. So even though this is not quite his version of awakening, as we'll see. So he left, and then the Bodhisattva goes on, still in search, monks, of what is wholesome, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. I went to Udaka Ramaputta and said to him, "Friend, I want to lead the spiritual life in this dharma and discipline." And Udaka Ramaputta replied, "The Venerable One may stay here." here's another tree where you can reside for a while in this new community. And then over the next page, it's word for word, the same story, but with this other teacher. Except this other teacher teaches a little bit different practice, which is later will be called by the Buddha the eighth jhana, called the base of neither perception nor non-perception, like the realm of neither perception nor non-perception. Would you like a description of this? Yeah, they're just trying to hint at something that's very hard, I think, to talk about with these titles, these names of these states. And Bodhisattva says the same thing. This only leads to rebirth in the base of neither perception nor non-perception, not being satisfied with that Dharma, disappointed. Just somewhat disappointed with it. I left. So this is called, in the Buddha's words, there's various versions of Buddha's life story and his path to awakening, but I like, this is an anthology of discourses from the Pali Canon, just a few years old, and translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi with excellent footnote and I think it's a great, this is just a little ad, I think this is a great kind of a overview of the Pali Canon. It's lots more than just the story to Buddha's awakening. And it's arranged by topic. And it kind of, it's just a great sort of, the Pali Canon is like tens of thousands of pages, so this is a nice summary. So yesterday we talked about the early Buddhist model of awakening, the four stages of awakening in early Buddhism, the stream enter, the once returner, the non-returner, and the arhat. And those stages are traversed through letting go of more and more subtle hindrances and obscurations and misunderstandings and we say kleshas, right? Like defilements of mind. And in the Mahayana, the great vehicle, things change a little bit. This is still, ancient times in India when this new movement, the great vehicle, started to emerge. And, for example, in the Flower Ornament Sutra, the great vehicle sutras have names like that. Instead of like the Noble Search Sutra, they're called the Flower Ornament Sutra. And in that sutra, the Buddha says, describing his own time of awakening, he says something like, "Amazing! Amazing! How could it be that all sentient beings have the knowing of the Tathagata?" Sometimes said the wisdom of the Tathagata jnana. All beings have this, but because of their delusions and confusions and obscurations, they don't see and realize this. That's a little bit different than they used to teach, the Buddha used to teach in the early sutras. But then, the same Flower Ornament Sutra lays out the path to awakening. in not just four stages, but 10 stages. It's even more staged, even more elaborate. It's not just a matter of, well, then just, they just have to realize that they have this Buddha knowing. It's like, well, it's going to take a while. It comes in this path called the 10 Bhumis. It's a huge section of the Flower Ornament Sutra, the 10 grounds or stages of the Bodhisattva path. And like the early path begins with stream entry upon the direct realization of no separate self, this Bodhisattva path to Buddhahood begins with a direct realization of emptiness of all phenomena, combined with this, exploding heart of compassion and uncontrived bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment that is the deep aspiration and wish to realize complete Buddhahood in order to free all beings from all suffering. Again, not just the idea like that's a great wish and beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Not just saying it, but like feeling it so strongly that kind of combined with this direct realization of emptiness, so that there's nothing else for me to do in this life but realize Buddhahood for all beings. And in fact, it's probably not going to happen in this life. It's probably, as the Buddha says, going to take approximately 3 eons. So let's get started. And we have to evolve this causal series we call our conventional self, refine it so fully free, not just from greed, hate, and delusion, but with this great compassion for all beings and the skillful means to benefit them infinitely. So these 10 stages of awakening are kind of aligned with, call the 10 paramitas, the 10 perfections. So in this first Bodhisattva Bhumi is like the perfection of giving or generosity, which is, the flavor is a little different here, right? Then the early model is more like, I just have to stop. This causal series must not be reborn again. This is the goal. In this Mahayana Bodhisattva path, it's more like, this is like all beings are involved. So right from the beginning, the first Bodhisattva stage is perfecting the practice of giving or generosity by realizing the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. Giving the Bodhisattva, not just giving away all their possessions, but giving away all their body parts and lifetime after lifetime, giving their life to benefit any sentient being in any possible way. And they're only able to do this because of realizing the emptiness of giver, receiver, and gift. Otherwise, it would be pretty hard. And after they finish that, and they're not concerned with how many lifetimes this takes. Each life is just like each human life is just a flash. We do our best, but keep giving it all away. And then the next Bodhisattva Bhumi is the perfection of ethics or virtue, where there's like the slightest type of harm to any sentient being. They're so diligent about like taking out their lice and putting them on nice warm mats so they can rest carefully, and then when they get hungry, putting them back in their hair so they can have a meal. The Mahayana path to awakening is kind of like the earlier one, and then it's this stages that are more and more exalted and take even longer. And the goal is not just to be the arhat, the worthy one, but to be a Buddha that can manifest bodies in every world system throughout the universe simultaneously to benefit beings. So the thing gets bigger and more difficult. That's why it's called the Mahayana, the great vehicle, the vast vehicle, the all-inclusive, inconceivable vehicle. In India these days, besides Coke and Pepsi, they have Maha Cola. It's the best. It's way greater than Coke and Pepsi. So, Dogen, in all those, what was it? Dogen lived in 1200. So this was like almost like 2,000 years after the Buddha already. Just thereabouts. He, by this time, understanding of awakening is starting to evolve. So Dogen has this essay called Great Awakening, Maha Bodhi, Daigo in Japanese, Great Satori. The character for Satori here, pronounced Go or Satori in Japanese, is in Chinese made up of one half is mind or heart, and the other half is I or my. So it's kind of like, etymologically, that Chinese character could be kind of like my mind, something like this. Again, this is a kind of pre-Buddhist, just colloquial word. Satori just means to realize or understand something. But it's interesting that the etymology of the Chinese character is like I and mind, or I and heart, my mind. Something kind of personal about this character. And Dai, again, means really vast, really great, like all-inclusively, all-encompassing. And Dogen brings up this teaching of Confucius. By this time in Buddhism, it had come to China, and Taoism and Confucianism were circulating in the spiritual and philosophical scene. So Dogen was, other places, quite critical of Taoism and Confucianism sometimes, just to make the point that Buddha's way is a little different. But here he's kind of brings up this teaching. He doesn't quote the whole thing, but the teaching of Confucius in the Analects of Confucius is to be born knowing is the best. And I think in this issue, in this essay on Great Awakening or Satori, Dogen's going to start talking about knowing here. And it's not the same word as Satori, but I think it's related, and that's why he's bringing this up. So Confucius says, to be born knowing is the best. And maybe for Confucius, he's talking about like knowledge, or kind of, to be a kind of innate genius or something like that. To be born knowing is the best. To know through learning is next best. To learn with difficulty or struggling is the third best. And to have difficulty and struggle but not learn anything is the lowest. And that's the way of common people. So some sort of discussion about knowing, natural knowing and learned knowing, and learning without knowing, and so on. So, so Dogen picks up on this saying of Confucius and says, human faculties are of many types. There are those born knowing, as Confucius says. There are those born knowing. These, being born, are liberated from birth. That is, theirs is the bodily investigation of the beginning, middle, and end of birth. So this is typical Dogen. It's kind of cryptic. And you just can get the kind of flavor of it. He's, I think Dogen's here just talking about this issue of knowing, which is related to great awakening. And he's, of course, reinterpreting this saying of Confucius in his own Zen way. Those born knowing are liberated from birth. They're born knowing, or they're knowing birth, and they're liberated from birth. Theirs is the bodily investigation. So we could say, we're talking about knowing, so it's body and mind investigation of the beginning, middle, and end of birth. We might say to investigate the beginning, middle, and end of birth with body and mind while in birth and life is to realize the unborn, to be liberated from birth. There are human faculties, there are many types. That's one type, those born knowing. There's also what Confucius calls those who know from study, or those who learn knowing. Instead of those who are born knowing, those who learn knowing, or those who know from learning or study. Instead of shōchi, born knowing, this is gaku nichi, those who learn through gaku, study, or knowing, or learning. These study and exhaustively investigate the self. Jikō. That is, they bodily investigate the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of study. Sounds kind of similar to me in this Zen way, so I don't know. Well, the way that Dogen talks about it. Remember, those born knowing are liberated from birth, and they bodily investigate the beginning, middle, and end of birth. Those who learn knowing, or know from study, exhaustively investigate the self. That is, they bodily investigate the skin, flesh, bones, marrow of study. So if we say they investigate the true self, or the false self, they exhaustively investigate that, then they would also come to realize no separate self, or all-inclusive self, just like those knowing at birth would come to realize the unborn. They bodily investigate the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of study, or learning. So, I don't know exactly what he means here, but with their body and mind, they thoroughly investigate all aspects of learning, everything there is to learn, maybe we could say. Also sounds pretty good. Dogen goes on, there are those with Buddha knowing. This is not knowing at birth or knowing from learning. In other words, it goes beyond those kind of categories. Transcending the boundaries of self and other. It is here without limit. It is unconcerned with the knowing of self and other as knowing a separate self and knowing a separate other. There are those, so that's a third type, Buddha knowing. They all sound quite similar, actually, to me, but he says they're different faculties. Yes. Like nothingness, or neither perception, either perception nor non-perception. It sounds kind of like that, and a lot of like Zen teachings and teachings of awakening also sound like neither perception nor non-perception. It sounds pretty good. It sounds like neither being stuck in perception nor non-perception. So as a name for the eighth jhana, I agree, it sounds quite nice. But part of the understanding within the tradition is it's somewhat limited because it's, and I think the bottom line why it's limited is, according to the Buddhist tradition, it's a conditioned state. And any conditioned state is impermanent, even if it lasts, what is it, 60,000 eons means it's limited. Means it's conditioned. The unconditioned is eternal. I think they're really playing with, when we're talking about unconditioned, we want to make sure we're not talking about something that lasts 60,000 eons. We're not just talking about something that lasts one lifetime. We know we don't want to get stuck in that, but even a 60,000 eon state of neither perception nor non-perception. The Buddha had a very high standard of places not to get stuck. So we have knowing at birth, knowing from learning, Buddha knowing, and then there are those who know without a teacher. Mushichi. Without relying on a good knowing friend, name for a spiritual teacher, without relying on scrolls of scripture, without relying on true nature, without relying on characteristics, without relying on anything, though they do not turn themselves about or interact with an other, they are fully revealed and true. So I think he's playing here with, first you might say, knowing without a teacher sounds suspicious. We like someone to confirm our understanding so we don't get off track. But here, Dogen seems to be saying, knowing without a teacher means there is no other. Teacher as other. There is no other. So, and the scriptures are not other. It's a kind of, they might be practicing with a teacher, but that teacher is not other than themselves. That's how I would understand it. It is not that of these several sorts, of these four types of human disposition, these four types of knowing, it's not that one is recognized as sharp and another is recognized as dull. The many types all manifest many sorts of meritorious deeds. So after he's saying there's these four distinctions, he's saying there's not really, it's not a matter of sharp or dull. It's not a matter of better or worse. Therefore, we should study which sentient or insentient being is not one of those who know at birth. So he's going back to knowing at birth here. And we should study which sentient being or insentient being is not one of those who know at birth, which I would understand to be a way of saying all sentient and insentient beings are those who know at birth. We should try to find a sentient or insentient being who doesn't know at birth. This is maybe how I would understand what Dogen's saying. If they have knowing at birth, they have awakening, satori, at birth. So here's part of Dogen's fancy moves now. This is kind of, you can see where he's going with this. If they have knowing at birth, and you know, sometimes we talk about knowing as just what's listening to these words right now, right? There's always knowing. Is there ever not knowing? I've never experienced not knowing. As long as there's any experience happening, there is knowing. And at birth, at the moment of birth, each of us as a little baby, right at such a moment, was there not knowing at birth? This is one way we could understand knowing at birth. And Dogen here is saying that which sentient or insentient being is not one of those who know at birth? And if they know at birth, if they have knowing at birth, they have satori at birth. They have my heart, my mind, that character, satori. They have awakening, they have realization, they have enlightenment. If they have knowing at birth, they have satori at birth, awakening at birth. They have verification at birth. Remember, this is one of Dogen's favorite words for awakening, show. Here it's actually shome, verification of light or knowing. In Rinzai Zen, they talk about inka shome. You may have heard of inka shome is like the certification of awakening. And shome means verification of light, really. Light or knowing. So all these sentient and insentient beings have this knowing at birth, therefore they have awakening at birth. They have this shome at birth. They have verification at birth. They have practice at birth. Shugyo. Remember, Dogen often puts together shu and show. Practice and verification are not two. Practice and verification are not two. One moment of practice, of just being this present knowing, practicing this present knowing is one moment of verifying this present knowing. So, Dogen's saying, they have shome at birth, they have shugyo at birth, they have verification at birth, they have practice at birth. Therefore, since the Buddhas and ancestors are known as tamers of humans, it's one of the epithets, 10 epithets of a Buddha, they're tamers of humans. They have been called awakened at birth, or born awakened. So he's saying Buddhas are born awakened, but he was just kind of implying that all sentient and even insentient beings are also born knowing. So Buddhas and ancestors are tamers of persons. They are born awakened. This is so because theirs is a birth that has taken up awakening. Sometimes Dogen seems to be almost equating knowing and awakening. Sometimes he's saying there's a birth that takes up awakening. It is an awakening at birth. There it is again, right there at birth. That is completely filled with great awakening. This is so because it's a study that takes up awakening. Therefore they, I think they means the Buddhas and Zen ancestors, therefore they take up the three realms and greatly awaken Daigo, great Satori. Yesterday we talked about these stages of early awakening was that ending craving for sense pleasure in the desire realm is one of the three realms. And then the once returner, the non-returner, and it's actually the arhat is the one who then ends craving for being in the form realm, is the second of the three realms, and ending craving to be or exist in the formless realm. So they're free in all three realms, these arhats. It's part of this, the desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm are kind of states of being. So here Dogen says, these Buddhas and ancestors take up these three realms and greatly awaken within them. They awaken within the ordinary desire realm. They awaken. It doesn't really say in them. It says they take them up. They take up the desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm, and greatly awaken. We could say in them, but we could say they have them. Or, yeah, they have them. Rather than the realms have those Buddhas, the Buddhas have the realms. Usually, we're used by the three realms, but Buddhas can use the three realms. They can take them up and awaken. There. They take up the three realms and greatly awaken. They take up the 100 grasses and greatly awaken. Kind of a Zen way of saying all this stuff that appears on the surface of the earth. They take up the four great elements and greatly awaken. That's earth, water, fire, and air. Again, the kind of the building blocks of all this stuff. They take up that and greatly awaken. They take up the Buddhas and ancestors and greatly awaken. The Buddhas and ancestors. Take up the Buddhas and ancestors and greatly awaken. They take up a koan and greatly awaken. Which could mean like, this essay is kind of like a big koan. But Dogen also uses koan to mean like the fundamental point, like reality itself, as in the Genjo koan. So they take up reality and awaken. And they take up Zen koans and awaken. The very time that they do so is right now. You could say awakening. The very time they do so is the immediate presence. The immediate present. Right now. They don't plan to take it up on the last day of Sesshin. They don't. What?
Yeah, we're done.
We're done. But we were done at birth. And somehow we still find ourselves in this hall. Once again. And yes.
One quick question.
Yes. I really appreciate how you just said that, especially your phrase, tiny bit. Dogen, later in this essay, I think uses that phrase, tiny bit, something like tiny bit, in much the same way as you just did, I think, is how he uses it to distinguish. We don't want to make too big a distinction between this knowing at birth and the great awakening of the Buddhas and ancestors, Shakyamuni Buddha's great awakening. We don't want to make, like, it looks like the early tradition made some, like, pretty heavy-duty distinction. Yeah, more than a little bit, right? If we don't speak of this great intention and great effort and great vow and throwing our whole body and mind into it, then without at least that little bit of distinction, then we maybe go home and we'd stop sitting so shame. So, I think that's a nice way we can keep exploring these next days and these teachings of, like, how do we not fall into everything is already it, or fall into, like, this is a big project that, like, we have a long way to go, and, like, therefore we might also leave Sesshin because it's just too much. Either way, we might leave Sesshin. But if we have just this little bit, we might be able to stay on our cushion. Little bit of distinction. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.